Martinez.
All right, so you're ready, Kim?
Yes.
Then I will call the Monday, October 22nd, 2012, County Commission meeting to order. And if you could take the roll, please.
Chairman Lutz.
I'm here.
Commissioner Demarest.
Here.
Commissioner Dirksen.
Here.
Commissioner Christensen.
Present.
Commissioner Rodman.
Here.
Commissioner Sherwood.
Here.
Commissioner Tuttle.
Here.
Thank you. This is the time in our meeting where we take comments from citizens on anything that is not on tonight's agenda. Is there anyone in the audience wishing to address the Planning Commission regarding anything that is not on tonight's agenda? Ma'am, if you could give us your name and address for the record, come ahead and come up to the podium. And then if you could give us your name and address for the record, please.
Thank you. Greetings, my name is Laura Thomas. I live at 16857 Copper Mountain Road. There are a couple things. I wanted to thank the planning department. Paul, I got to work with him today. I had some additional questions on a rezone application. So we went back and forth today on that. So I really wanted to acknowledge that we worked on that. And I'm assuming that at some point they'll get some additional information on that rezone. And then my question to, I'm sorry, Paul, you're the chair? So if we have any comments on signage, when do we give those?
That's a good question. Tonight we just had a workshop. Mr. Sachs, is that right? On the sign code, it's just a workshop, there's no sign.
So purely an introduction to the process. You'll be introduced to the new format that we're going to be using.
Okay. Code, so. Great. Yeah, so when we have a workshop, what we do is we often will open up to the public, allow them to give us some comments on that. So it'll be later in this evening.
Mr. Chairman, would there be anything to preclude or prohibit a person from offering comments on the sign code during the public comment session?
Not that I know. We usually just...
Thank you.
And there will be additional public or planning commission meetings on this. There will be a final public hearing.
And there, yes, there will be an actual public hearing on this as well as other meetings.
So how would you like me to do it?
Well, if you're willing to wait until we have our presentation this evening, it might just work better.
But I think my questions answered. So okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else in the audience wishing to make a comment? I think
Mr. Chairman, before we go forward, Laura made comment of discussion that we might be hearing more of later. Paul, was there something on that that was going to be shared with us?
Just some, can't really discuss the projects that are not on the agenda, but just to divert for a moment, we will need to schedule a public hearing with the commission for Roosevelt Road rezoning, and there's some questions about the CEQA process that some further investigation. But at the end of the meeting, during our discussion comments period, I'll talk about a potential schedule for next month.
So are you saying that we're not allowed to take any comment right now on that? It's not on the agenda.
Well, we can take comments on it, certainly, but it's...
Is that the question?
I just was curious. I had talked with Laura as well earlier, and I talked with Paul too. So I was just curious if there was any further to share with us about that topic. And I appreciate it.
Just that we do need to do a public hearing with the Planning Commission, and there's some questions about the CEQA process that we don't have all the answers to.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
More on that later.
Give us your name and address for the record.
Vicki Mullen, 10312 210th Street Southeast, Snohomish, Washington 98296. I had a great deal of information to share on something that's on the agenda, so apparently now that I can't, I've given it all to Paul, so if anybody wants any of it, I guess he's got it all, as far as just a lot of information. Anyway, so, and the other thing is I'm trying to, I have been at council meetings for a number of years, and I've seen, you know, how that kind of tends to work. It's changes over the years, but I haven't been to planning, so I'm trying to understand a little better how this worked, because it's just the process. I'm trying to understand you have a workshop process, which it seems like there's some give and take or some kind of discussion, because we came up on you know, on the litigation, that came up and, you know, asked our question. And then there just seemed to be a public hearing after that, with public testimony, and then it's closed, and now it's decided, and it just seems like such a fast-tracked way. Is that the way things usually are like that? Is it that fast? I mean, maybe I just need to be a little quicker in getting the information, because from what I took home a packet of information and went through it, and I didn't see any of this information until now, you know, until this week, and now it's like over. The same thing can be said with looking at your minutes. I'm not finding any minutes. The last ones that were done, you approved last time I was here, were the 9th, I think the 9th and the 23rd of April, perhaps. That's almost 6 months worth of minutes that are missing, and so I don't know how to get up to speed with where you guys are at on things as far as being, for, you know, to have early and continuous public participation on these GMA and comp plan amendment kinds of things. I just feel that I can't stay ahead of it. There's just so much of it. I'm about minutes to go through. I don't know. I think, not sure how you do that, but I think your minutes should be up to date, and or at least a lot closer than April. That's all I have to say on that.
Thank you. One thing that, we do things differently than the council. One of the things, we are probably a little bit more casual with our workshops. Usually we have very few people here. Many times this room is the audience, there's no one there. So when we have a workshop, we usually allow public to just make comment. A lot of times we just interact back and forth. It's kind of been that way traditionally. And then when it comes to public hearings, what we have done, since I've been here that I can recall, is anytime we have a public hearing, we usually make a decision that night, and I've always understood it, could have understood it incorrectly, that once we close the public testimony portion of the public hearing, that to keep the process on track, I guess you could say, is we try to make a decision so that there's no other comments that come back, because that would be the designated time, as I understood it, as it would be advertised in the paper for people to come and make comments.
I thought that just went to quasi-judicial. I didn't realize it went to other things as well.
So that's, and that I unfortunately, I'm not sure on either. I've always thought it to be that way. I don't know if anyone on staff has more information. We don't have legal counsel here, almost never. So, Paul, do you have any information?
At this point, I think it's more of a question for legal counsel to be specific and exact on just what the rules are. But as I understand it, once the public testimony is closed, there are no further comments since that may be extraneous information that was not taken through that public formal testimony up to that period.
All right. Is it possible then for future that we can ask the question to our city attorney on that, so we can get, just so I know myself?
Right.
Thank you. And then as far as timing goes, I know you mentioned that it seemed to go quick from workshop to public hearing. It all, from my experience, has been, it almost depends on the project. Sometimes we go through workshops for over a year before we have a public hearing. Sometimes it's just one quick workshop and we move on. So I don't know if the commissioners have any comments on that.
Well, I might just add, you made mention of materials being available. The materials that we looked at for the public hearing last Monday were posted on the city's website some number of days, I'm not sure how many, prior to that public hearing. As far as the post-comp plan amendment text, the zoning code amendment text, and the staff report.
And mine was an opinion. I had asked Paul earlier today, he wasn't sure. I just wanted to know if the Snohomish School Board was made aware that when the changes are made, it makes their capital facility plan not have the right wording. That type of thing is what I wanted to bring up. Not any more information to the hearing, just that I was, I had never heard from the Snohomish School Board or heard anyone talk about them. And the Snohomish School Board is definitely impacted by the changes that are going to be made in the formula. So that was part of it. But I gave it all to Paul so that he could share it with you if that's, if you want the other information.
Chairman Lutz, the council will have a public hearing on this issue also. So when the council has a public hearing on the same issue, the record's open again.
Great. So there'll be
plenty of opportunity then to to supplement.
Excellent. Thank you. If you could give us your name and address for the record.
Hi, Senator Gently, 13624 Chain Lake Road, Monroe, Washington. I just thought to echo a little bit of what Vic just said about it feels like, as a citizen that's trying to get up to speed on these kind of sweeping changes that are happening with the North Chelsea Plan, sign code, school mitigation fees, you try to go back and look at the old minutes, and I, online anyway, I found that the most recent minutes that are available are from March 19th, and that was a draft set of minutes, which is fine. I don't care whether it's draft or final, but it is very difficult to kind of see how the process works, to see how your prior deliberations were, and what were your recommendations to council, and that. To see the whole picture when the minutes are so far behind. And, you know, it is, you know, I hate to nitpick, but it's really, you know, the law does require that the minutes be prompt and recorded and open to public inspection. In case you're interested, it's RCW 42-32-030. And, you know, it's perfectly acceptable. I was looking at the municipal research website, and they said that it's okay to post draft minutes, just clearly stamp them drafts that people know they haven't been approved, but at least it's giving the public something to look at, something to study and get up to speed on what's going on. A lot of us don't have time to come to every meeting or to listen to the audio of every meeting to find out what really happened. And actually, the minutes are the official record and not the audio anyway. So I would just like to throw that out there, that it would be nice if we could somehow get something as far as the record out there to the public quicker than 6 months. Thank you very much.
Thank you. One thing I have noticed is that after staff was reduced in size, and the length of time to get to our minutes did lengthen. Is there anything staff that we could do that maybe post some draft minutes? And if the audio is that online, is that correct? I know it's not the same as minutes, but
Audio is online, available online. We are trying to catch up with minutes. We have had some temporary help the last several weeks, which is also helping us catch up on a number of things. But we can make an effort to get a little more caught up with these minutes as best we can.
Okay.
We will have more before the next meeting.
And then one thing, I guess we've never really posted them until they are approved. Is that having a draft up, is that an option, or is there, is that basically you're getting to the point where it's got to be typed and it's going to be approved right away anyway?
We can look into that, posting draft minutes.
I suppose the lengthiest part is getting the drafts even put together, is it?
It just simply takes time.
Okay. Thank you. Yeah, good. Your name and address for the record, please.
Diane Elliott. So,
you're good.
15550 174th Avenue Southeast. And again, I've mainly gone to council meetings, and I know this is my first planning commission meeting. And I'm trying to figure out why things get through so fast again, so I decided to get a little more involved here. But, you know, I don't know about the recusal process here. Is that if someone is involved in the project, is that something they should be recused of, or what is the recusal process?
If
someone makes up their mind ahead of time, this is the way they want it, without looking further into the issue, because that's only in council.
But I understand if you're talking about recusing, someone recusing themselves from a meeting, what
they
do is
prejudice, and they would not.
There is, we are asked to do that. We do that. We are people that many times have recused themselves. But that, I don't think, has anything to do with the timing.
But I'm trying to figure out the process of how things go through, and then sometimes it seems like, to me, rubber stamping it, or you're getting direction, and that's why I'm just trying to get down to trying to understand what does go one, but I would like to read you something. Wait for discussion and contract is on the agenda for Tuesday at 7. Supporters need to come or else council will only hear the virtues of protecting this pristine Walden Lake nature preserve and how birds will be stuck in the strangling death traps, a.k.a. cables, even though they've avoided power lines around the lake up until now. Believe me, at least two of the current city council members are against this recreational opportunity and seem to agree with the 20 to 30 angry neighbors and some citizens have more rights to use the park than others. Please come share your interest in allowing this to be considered by the city. Also, be prepared to speak to the lies that are being perpetuated about traffic and noise. The park is for everyone. Bridget Tuttle, December 13, 2011.
Anyone else in the audience wish to make any comments to the planning commission? Any items on the next agenda? Seeing no hands, we will move on. We have no minutes to approve and no public hearings tonight, so we have our workshops. Our first one tonight is the sign code update. And Mark, I guess you're presenting this.
Thank you. I'm Mark Langhammer. I'm a land use planner for the city of Monroe and also heavily involved in sign regulation and enforcement. Tonight I'm going to introduce to you that topic and the direction we're going forward with, and then I'll be introducing the consultant that we have on board to help us expedite the sign rewriting process. In the last several years, it's become clear to city staff as well as the business community and general population that our current sign code is antiquated, contradictory, and difficult to administer and enforce. In January of this year, staff set out to identify flaws in the current code. At the same time, sign technology has been changing and to have more emphasis on things like neon, electronically changeable signs, and digitally animated signs. We have received applications in the recent months where reasonable signs from a practical purpose have not been permittable under the current code, but may have been helpful to a business if they could have had that sign. And we also have had a case where a sign that met the letter of the code would have been 22 feet wide and 35 feet tall. We called it the obelisk. That business ended up not coming to town, but they had a right to build such a sign, and we're thinking that the sign code could be improved to present such a sale as that. An interest in the ability to have certain off-street premise sign has also been brought to us in a number of cases. So in short, the business community was asking for changes and the existing code is outdated and convoluted. We have identified a number of specific issues and have now hired Tom Beckwith, who's an expert, consultant in modernizing sign codes, and he's going to be our catalyst to expedite our process. What you will see tonight is nothing new as far as regulation and enforcement goes. Tom, our consultant, has brought to us a reorganization of the sign code, which takes it from volumes of text to a tabular format that is easier to read and understand and make changes to during this update process. Once we are all familiarized with the new format, Tom and city staff will bring you proposed changes to the code to begin making changes to fix the issues such as noted below, and that'll be over the coming weeks. Another goal of this code update is to reinforce the downtown side guidelines and make enforceable regulations where we now have simple guidelines downtown. We also intend to integrate the North Kelsey sign regulations into the main body of the citywide sign code, and this will clarify and strengthen the North Kelsey regulations as well as possibly improve the sign code itself. With that as my summary, I would like to introduce our sign code consultant, Mr. Tom Beckwith, and turn the microphone over to him.
Okay. Welcome. Thanks very much. When we do an update to a sign code, it's usually two phases. First phase is style, get things into an organizable, easy to read and interpret format. And then the substance later on is to take a look at what's in the code and decide whether or not that's what you want to do or want to achieve. The style part is done primarily by introducing tables and graphics. And I think we hand out some typical graphics and definitions, for example. Right now, your whole code is words. But if we use the table format and we use graphics to illustrate what things mean and what we're trying to achieve, it's not only more effective, but it's just simpler. And later on, if you want to make any changes, it's simpler to try to do that. Now, you were given, I think, three handouts before the session, or you were emailed these, right? Two handouts. One was the color, one was the example table, and one was your current ordinance with strike-throughs to reflect the table. Now, your final ordinance will be published online, and there are some format stipulations about publishing online. It's a little difficult, for example, to embed graphics in text when it goes online, so any graphics we create will probably be attached to the end of the ordinance. So it'll be part of the ordinance, but it won't flow like you would a report where you see things inserted into the text. But if you go to the table, I'll give you kind of an outline of how this is done and some of the implications of that. First off, we group the signs by their purpose, and then we group them by your zoning district. So you can see the very first block of entries there are access, landmark, and informational signs. And those would be all zones. And those signs are the type that you use for your house address, you use for the building entries, if you have parking lots, and so on. You can see right now all the cells are blank. And that's because your ordinance does not address those kinds of signs. At least it doesn't specify them. Then you can see there are permanent signs that go up all kinds of residential zones. Then there are grouped to be permanent signs that do your, all of your non-residential zones. And then permanent signs that are in the public zone that are unique to it. Permanent signs in the office zone that are unique to it. Permanent signs in the downtown, except for your Rails and Rose neighborhood, that are unique to it. Permanent signs in general service. Permanent signs in industrial districts. And then limited duration signs, which include construction signs on properties or sale signs on properties. And then temporary signs to deal with everything from open houses to garage sales to farmers markets to political signs. Now, grouping them that way, we can eliminate a lot of repetition if it were in text where you would say an office zone and you have to repeat everything that was almost in the previous zone in order to carry through. So by grouping them into these kind of categories, we can cut down how many times we have to address a sign. Then if you look at each block, you'll see the definition by the type of sign, whether it's a wall sign, a window sign, a freestanding sign, an awning sign, and so on. Now the definitions of your ordinance specify what those are, and in the definitions it's pretty specific about how you mount them and what they're made of and so on. But here, our key issue is one, and you can see this in the columns as you go across, is a permit required? And the second is, what's the number that you can have of that particular sign? The next is, what is the area maximum that you can have for that particular sign? The next is its maximum height, its setback, if a setback requirement is. And then in the comments are currently a lot of the kind of alternative formulas that you have in ordinance for calculating some of these signs. Now, where do you see a gray versus a white? First off, if you go into the definition of the table, and we've inserted that into your ordinance, it says if something is blank, that means that that's not allowed. If you get down right now, there's a blank at the end of these categories that says there's no stipulation for it, and there's no provision for you to have it in the current ordinance. Where you see where I've graded things, that's where I've extrapolated what your ordinance is saying, but where lots of times I forgot to say it. Lots of times in your ordinance, you'll say something about you may have a wall sign, but it doesn't say you may have one wall sign. Or how many walls. Or whether or not a setback. Setback occurs lots of times as 5 feet is your default setback, but it doesn't expressly say that every time a sign comes up. So the gray areas are an extrapolation of your current ordinance. Not something new. You're saying that this is what's left out when you try to write it rather than put it into a number. At the very end of the table is where we put any footnotes that try to state anything that deviates from what we're trying to incorporate exactly into the table. And there are three categories there. One is just general, defining, for example, A, the area under a sign that has to be free of obstruction, and that depends on whether it's over a sidewalk or it's over some other type of area, or the column heading stating exactly how they're interpreted. And then last are just row footnotes. Now, once we get this done, and this is the first kind of attempt at doing this style, we want to end up where there are no footnotes, where you don't end up having to go to the bottom of the table to see what anything says. And so if we get good at this, we should be able to do it all right in that row, so that if anybody picks up a sign and says, I want to know what I can do, for example, down under permanent signs in a residential area where I want to put up my name and my address. I should be able to read across that row and know everything I need to know. And ideally, may not even have to go into the rest of the ordinance to do that. Now, what we did in the strike-through is to go through, and if you just look through the ordinance, you can see how many strike-throughs there are that get eliminated simply by using the table format. We can't strike through everything. There are still some important definitions. For example, when you get into roof signs, and one of the issues there is how they're secured to the roof, or a projecting sign, how they're secured to the wall, and so on. And those things should remain in the text of the ordinance itself. But anything that we can put into the table format, we want to do. I think that page 8 of the strike through the existing ordinance introduces what the sign allowance table is. And we also put in another table, if you go to page 22, another of your features is the duration, how long some of these limited duration signs can be up, like banners and business openings and inflatables and real estate signs and so on. And there we introduced another table into the text, and you can see how many sentences and paragraphs that takes out, simply by using that table format. Once we've finished the style, we think that we've simply gone to a format that allows us to get rid of text and use the strike-throughs, then we'll take all the strike-throughs out and show you the ordinance itself without that, so you can see just exactly what we've achieved, and we use that as a starting base as we go into substance. Now, one thing we want to achieve in this process, in the style process, though, is consolidate everything in all of your sub-area plans and your ordinances only that deals with signs. So when you're dealing with signage, you only go to one place and it's all there. Right now you have your sign ordinance, then you also have your North Kelsey area sub-area plan, and that are some sign provisions, and also your downtown, and there's some sign provisions in that. Most of what's in those latter two, though, aren't dimensional things. They're not sizes, heights, and so on. They deal more with what's the design that you're trying to create, what's the objective of it, what's your guidelines. And what we found is if we put guidelines into ordinances, we run two risks. One, if we're not careful, we have the courts interpreting what you're trying to do in your guidelines rather than you. And two, they become somewhat inflexible because if you want to change any of the guidelines or modify them, then you have to go through another ordinance, and you have to go through hearings and so on. So what we've found is more effective is to say in your ordinance, attached to this ordinance are the design guidelines that are maintained by the planning department and approved by the planning commission and city council. And so all the ordinance has to say is you will have those guidelines, they will be maintained, But then that gives you the flexibility of making changes to those guidelines anytime you want, without having to go back through the ordinance process. The second thing we found is guidelines must do three things to be defensible and to be effective. One, it has to state the purpose of what you're trying to do if you call out a guideline. Say in the downtown area, that might be under awning signs. What's the intent of not just your regulation on sizes, because that's in your ordinance, what are you trying to achieve as far as design and the impact of that sign on the rest of the district? And the second is design principles. What are the things you're trying to encourage the sign and the property owner, the sign industry and the property owner to achieve that's effective for you? Because you're regulating not just for safety, but for aesthetics. And last, you need to tell them what you want to avoid, what are the things you want to avoid. So if it's in the downtown, you're trying for a theme and there's a certain typeface or a certain body you're trying to achieve, then in your principles, you want to say, well, should it look like this era? And what you'd want to avoid is very stylistic, computer-driven, sans-serif type that obviously doesn't fit the era. And you can say that in your language. But if you really want to be effective, you use graphics. And you use graphics of good signage. This is an example from a design guidelines that we've recently done for another jurisdiction. And this is talking about wall signs of large scale. Of large big box kind of stores. You can see there's Best Buy, there's Famous Footwear, there's a Gold's Gym, and there's REI. Now when we did this analysis on this jurisdiction, this was Kennebec, we're also looking at how large some of these areas would be and how effective they should be. And these are settled upon as the most effective, and all of them were smaller in the typeface of the commercial message than what the city thought they ought to have to be effective. But if you look at those signs, they've all used color, they've all used placement, they've made the sign part of their logo, and they're very, very visible. But we did show you some really bad examples from Kennard. I think the worst one was Joann's. There were like 30 different things that the Joann's store put up on their sign face to try to identify all the things they sell. It was so busy that the only thing that anybody recalled was Joann's and how busy it was. But the purpose of this page is to say, well, when we say wall signs, which we define size and placement and so on, this is what we're trying to achieve, and these are good examples of what we're trying to achieve. Equal or better. And what we need is a page for every kind of sign we've just defined in your ordinance. It covers all the signs that you're trying to use in your guidelines for the downtown and all the signs that you're trying to create in your North Kelsey area. And then because it's an attachment to the ordinance, you can update it as you get better and better examples, ideally ones that are local. Frankly, a sign manufacturer comes in, the two things they're going to use is they're going to pull out the table, and if they can interpret the table well enough, they won't bother to read the ordinance, and they want to see your examples. What's the state of the art as you define it in Monroe? Because this is what they're competing against for impact if they're going to design a new sign. So when we come back on the substance portion of this, we'll bring back the manual we think best fits what you're trying to achieve from what you've developed so far in the downtown, in North Kelsey, and in this ordinance. But it has an attachment to your ordinance, not in the language of the ordinance itself. Does that make sense? Any questions on where we are? As I said, this is our first attempt at the style. It takes us a couple times through on the style to get to where we're really effective. There's a couple lines in there I think were, and even my brother's a lawyer, so I can say this. You don't want lawyers to write your ordinance. Because one of the things in one of the lines was you have a wall sign, the maximum is 150 square feet, and or the lesser of 20% of the area is measured by the wall, provided it wasn't over 150 square feet. Well, the simplest thing is to say you get 20% of the wall as long as it's not over 150 feet. Much shorter way of doing it. And a lawyer will write out all the numbers, and the last thing you want to do is write the numbers. You won't be able to see the number. So it takes us a while as we try to, you really get into that, your ordinance to try to get down to what it's really trying to say. And there are some contradictions in there too, which will need to resolve, or at least bring to you as substantive questions to decide. Like one of them allows more freestanding signs, and then it says, and you can, if you have more tenants, you can add more size to the sign, provided it doesn't get over a certain area, which is like two or three times the amount that's in the table itself. What's trying to say is your total signage shouldn't get over that. A lot of places in the ordinance it forgets to use total signage. Now that's a substantive choice as well as a style. So when you get to that point, we'll highlight those, at least what we recommend, and you'll have the opportunity then to decide if you're comfortable with that.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Beckwith. Commissioner, any questions?
Sounds good.
Brian? I got one real quick since we're just getting started on this. Well, I guess a couple. One is for Mr. Sachs. We got some more meetings on this coming up. I'm sorry. You have been... you presented this. It's almost like it's shifted out. So we're going to be coming back to this a couple more workshops on this?
Yes, like Tom said, next round we'll begin having substantive changes to propose to you. And we'll be coming back multiple times until we get it dialed in to a point where we think it's ready to present to City Council.
Great. And then I had one thing that's, I'm sure I'm getting ahead of the program, but I noticed window signs was crossed out because it's going to, I guess, going to be elsewhere. And one thing I noticed in Redmond, Fred Meyer has their big Fred Meyer sign that's actually inside the building through windows.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if that was an attempt to get around the code or how that worked. I'm guessing that it was probably approved, but didn't know if window signs are still going to be addressed and
yes.
Avoiding being able to avoid
your current, one place in your current ordinance that says that window sign is something on the window or right mounted right behind the window. When we get to the substance, that's a question. Because you start mounting behind the window, then it gets pretty dicey about controlling and defining it. Another issue on window signs is whether it's opaque or transparent. You know, if you go to most business establishments on the door will be all their credit cards and their operating hours and so on. And the typeface there is opaque. But if you go into any new retail area, the logo of the store will be every single window is kind of repeated. It's either a banner down the bottom or it's a banner on the top. And some of those are opaque and some of those are opaque and transparent. So then the issue becomes, are you trying to encourage your ability to see through the window to make it more interesting and exciting? And graphics is part of that, but then trying to define what that is. That's a substance question. We'll be back.
Thank you. Questions? Mr. Christensen?
Just one comment. Being a retired engineer, I love the idea of the table where it becomes more right in your face. I really like that idea. I think that's a good thing.
Commissioner Zimmerman?
I would concur with that. As long as the table, in turn, will print adequately on the web. I've seen many tables in code that you look at on the web and you can't print out the table. You mentioned the concern with illustrations and the way the document flows. I think it's an HTML web to be programmed in. I think the same concern can exist with the tables.
You'll see that when the ordinance is done, your font will change. And the way it's presented on the page will change a bit, and that's to reflect the fact that it's probably going to be published. So yeah, we try to design them so that they're legible and readable. There are some rules for that.
And I think, you know, the approach to me is making sense. I appreciate your comments on the design standards being incorporated by reference. Something that is available and illustrative of what the city's looking for. As I recall, this was the result of a joint effort of some council members and representatives from the business community last time around. We've not seen it, but we didn't write this code as it currently exists, again, as I recall. So this was actually, not having read it, new to me even. So I can only take you at your word that it's been problematic to implement and
yes.
Run. I don't know that it's ever been anything but that. And I don't know that it ever changes, but I guess we can all hope for the best.
It's going to change.
Okay, we have had a number of unintended consequences in trying to interpret this code or in applicants being pretty clear that they can build a 22 by 35 foot tall sign, which they indeed could, and that unintended consequence. But I think the best part about this is, in terms of trying to simplify and make it more understandable and usable, not just for the applicants and citizens, but for the staff as well, in terms of interpreting what can be done and trying to eliminate as we can those unintended consequences. But the concept of putting this information from how many pages, Tom, of text to a pretty straightforward table, I think is a huge step forward. And I think there's been a good translation of text into this table, and then now we can start cherry picking the details and what changes might be appropriate for your consideration as we go through this. Good step forward.
Dave? Mark, there's been an ad hoc committee working on this, is that right?
Yes, we started with a small committee, but several businessmen and Paul and Jeff and myself kind of got together and got the ball rolling. And then at some point, it became evident that with everything else we're doing, the staff really didn't have time to go into depth, and maybe we didn't have the expertise to do it properly either. And several people supported the idea of hiring a consultant, and we feel real lucky to have Tom on board.
So that
I support that.
Will that information from that committee be brought forward into the process too, or is it just going to be we just move on from that? Was there nothing generated?
No, we've kept a complete log of the discussions we've had, and we've summarized it. And there's part of it right here in your cover sheet. You know, the bullet points of lengthy discussions that we've had that were boiled down that way.
Okay. And finally, we envision most of these issues being addressed at some point in this process through the use of the tables?
Well, through the table and the graphics.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Questions? Any other questions?
Well,
if I could add, and one of the principal goals here too at the end of the process is to have an enforceable code. And I can't emphasize enough that the code has to be written in such a way that when we're all said and done, we can start enforcing the sign regulations in this city without, you know, just massive outcry when you go out to pick up somebody's A-board off the front of their thing, or ask a business owner to modify a sign, or say no to something. Because right now, the light enforcement actions that the planning department has taken over the last year or so have been met with a bit of an uprise from the business community, simply because we've had a code that is nebulous at best when it comes to enforcement. So that's one of the principal goals here, and I think that's a bit of a trade-off that the business community, at least the ad hoc folks have represented to us, is that the business community will accept enforcement if they have a code that satisfies their need to advertise their business. So that's the compromise that I think we're working towards. I know we'll have lengthy discussions, I'm sure, during this process, somewhere that line is, but enforceability is an important part.
Thank you. And then, commissioners, we often allow comments from citizens. During a workshop, any objection to allowing some comments from citizens tonight?
No.
Anyone wishing to make comments tonight? Go ahead. If you could come forward again and just give us your name and address again for the record.
Thank you, Barb Thomas,
almost to the city of Duval Planning Department. You know, on that side of the table, I live at 16857 Copper Mountain Road. I'm actually really excited that the city of Monroe is taking on the sign code. I think it was definitely needed. I have a couple of hopefully just helpful suggestions and some comments, because we just went through the exact same process for the last 18 months with an ad hoc committee as well. One of my suggestions would be, and I didn't really realize until I was sitting on the side of the table, but when you give presentations and have consultants, it would be helpful to have PowerPoint utilized or information for the public to see, because it was really hard to follow when you don't have enough information up front. The other thing I was going to say is pictures and illustrations can actually be codified. We just learned that through our process. And so our code in Duval does actually do that. I wasn't completely clear about design guidelines. That one can be very subjective, so be really careful when you go down that pathway of looking at design standards for signage and who's going to review them. Is it administrative? Is it through your planning commission? I think one exercise that would be helpful for planning commission, and we did this in Duval and it really helped them, was to do a visual and massing exercise. I saw that one of the handouts where they show the little pictures and like the pole signs and stuff, those aren't actually to scale. I scaled it out while I was back there and it shows it like at 24 feet. And I'm assuming that we're going to allow signs higher than that, but I'm not completely sure. So maybe go through a real visual massing exercise. This one, the next one that I have on my list can actually be, I'm not sure how it's going to work for Duo. I'll come back and tell you in about a year to know if it works. But we actually put a minimum letter height in our code so that you could actually read the signs. I don't know how I feel about that professionally as a planner. I think it can go either way. But it would help in the example that you gave out, I don't know, about in Eastern Washington where somebody had a sign that had so much on there you couldn't really see it. And part of that also goes to size and scale. One thing to remember not to fall into is political signs have First Amendment rights, and you can't technically limit the size of them. And so I did see that in there. I don't know what you're going to do with that, but there's an AG opinion about that. Another pitfall is window signs. You have to be careful between the difference of a window sign and merchandising for a business, and they're two different separate subjects. I also encourage that if you have your ad hoc committee, which it sounds like you do, that you have, you know, that it's a broad scale, that there's members of the planning commission on it, council on it, the business community, but also members at large, because that's really the only way you're going to be able to get, I think, a wide range of comments. I think that was it. I think I said a lot. Thank you for letting me come.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Anyone else? If you could give us your name and address again for the record, please.
I'm Kathleen, 13624 Chain Link Road, Monroe. I was just about curious who is on the ad hoc committee?
We had Eldon Harlan.
Bartleheimer.
I don't even know if I ever knew his last name. And Dick Steemert. And the three of us. And did we have someone else early on?
No,
that
was
pretty much it.
The three of you.
Paul Popelka, who's the planning manager, Jeff Sachs, the economic development manager, and myself, planner.
And was that, I'm just curious, who appointed those members, or how does that work?
We just pulled together some people that we felt, that we knew were interested in the sign code, and that thought we could help us get out of the blocks and begin to develop some ideas about, you know, where the sign code is currently and some things where the sign code needs to go, and So Eldon represents the Chamber of Commerce, and he's a business owner. And Dick is a sign professional. So we felt that their input was pertinent, and we just began there really on kind of a casual basis. Like I said, we took lots of notes, and staff and the committee would bring forward ideas and put them into the pot every few weeks, and we just kind of moved forward to there to this point.
Thank you. I just, you know, would like to say that it would be nice to have, I think as Laura said, citizen input on that, because we are stakeholders as well. We have to live here, and it would be, you know, nice to have not just, you know, business owners and city planners and an economic development person, but people who, you know, are interested in the visual blight of signs that can be created. And so I would really encourage you to try to reach out to get people from the community that may be interested in being on that ad hoc committee, and then you actually have minutes of some sort that can be published so people can look at those. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Any questions, Mr. Chairman?
Yeah. Didn't I hear from staff that the ad hoc committee has in fact been replaced by the consultant?
That's what I thought I understood. Is that, are we misunderstanding that?
The ad hoc committee was originally formed. We invited others as well, but we had two that really were expressly interested. The ad hoc committee was formed to generate a list of specific issues. This process did not start out as a redo of the sign code, but as we basically finished up our initial work with the ad hoc committee to define what the issues were, we began to realize, especially with Tom's help, that it goes beyond just these specific issues. We really need to talk about revamping the code. And of course, for months we've been taking input on a regular basis from every applicant that comes in, who also, you know, really helped us define what the issues were on a daily or weekly actual working basis. So it has evolved from a fairly cherry-picking exercise to more of an in-depth redo to fix not just a few things, but to take it to a higher level. And there are going to be some other public sessions. We'll keep this broadcast as best we can through this process, but the intent is also to get through this process, vet the signing code, these changes, get it on the books, and as Jeff mentioned, getting active on enforcement. We've gone way too long with the sign code is basically not broken, and we've gotten a lot of that feedback. It isn't that it's that it has an endemic disease that doesn't allow us to use it and work with it. But we need to get to a point where we can use it, we fix it, we enforce it, and start to clean up some of the problems we've had in the past.
Thank you. So I understand, or try to jog my memory here, we first heard of this quite some time ago. It was brought up that it was going to be happening. This is our very first workshop, and from what I understand, there's going to be several more where we start to get into the specifics, and I'm sure with the nature of the Planning Commission that we are, we'll be going over more details we often do on a lot of these issues.
I would say we've really been at the very beginning stages of a process, and that process is still forming. I ended up having to be off work for about 5 weeks, and that was part of the impetus to hiring a consultant. And now that we've done that, we've seen what good work Tom does. We're very happy that we've done that, and it does change the process somewhat, but it's still a very formative stage of the process.
Right, and we'll continue to be quite open with our hearings and workshops.
Yes.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you. Vicki Mullin, 10312, 210th Street, Southeast, Snohomish, Washington, 98296. Having been part of the previous process of this, I feel a little like Bob Wilcox when he gets up and says, now I'll give you a little bit of the history. One thing is, I would like to know if your consultants, I really like some of the things you've said, do you currently own a sign company?
No.
Or have any conflict of interest in that?
No.
Maybe you might want to know that when this was done, this was, as they refer to it, as the Chamber of Commerce's version of a sign code. That's why perhaps Dave Demers, Commissioner Demers, might not be familiar with it, because in my opinion, it was pulled from the Planning Commission, taken to the Council. I believe Mitch Ruth took the Council's, took the Chamber of Commerce's version, and then became, that's how it became law. And one of the people on the committee was Eldon Bartleheimer and Dick from SignCo, the same people on your ad hoc committee. And Dick from SignCo gave the planning commissioners, maybe not all the commissioners, but I know he gave the council member a book on, you know, effective signage from a sign company business owner's perspective. And so everything that was in here, many of the items in here, were done from the perspective of the biggest sign, the most electronic you could find. I fought tooth and nail to have the downtown section separated out and to use the Main Street approach for the signage in the historic downtown area, and that's why there was a separate part of that, and that's why it's separately into the sub-area plan. And I would just go on record to say I would do that again. I think that the historic downtown, that there are is, you know, good reasons to keep an area like that with the downtown. I'm sure you're familiar with all those kinds of signage and what's useful in that. And this sign code was enforceable, at least it was before, in a lot of different ways, as far as awards being off-site and everything. Ben Swanson, previous planner here, used to go and do it, and so did other employees, and just take them and pull them, and it seemed to be fine with that. I also want to go on record as saying, and Paula, you know it, you have signage downtown, neon signage, that the people actually applied for a sign, used a different application, put up a totally different sign than what their application said, and you still have not removed that sign. So that, I mean, there are things in here that could have been enforced if, I mean, but I really like the idea of the table. I think it's great. I like the idea of a person coming to the community that does not have a vested interest in owning a sign company being part of the process. I plan on watching this process and putting my input into it. I don't have a problem with businesses having signage. I just think there should be a balance on the signage. And I don't know how you would tend to do this if we're looking at currently at the North Kelsey, and I know I can't, testimony's already been on the North Kelsey, but if you use the signage, if you just pull that out of the North Kelsey plan and put it to the general commercial, you need to look at what the current general commercial has. So I'm concerned about that. But I brought that up last week in my public testimony too. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Commissioner,
thank you. Commissioner,
any questions?
Thank you.
Anyone else with any input on this item? Thank you. Thank you, Mark. So do you know when we'll be looking at this again then?
Well, the regularly scheduled meeting is November 12th, but that's actually a holiday. So I wanted to order the commission to see if we could meet on the 19th in place of the 12th. I haven't talked to Tom about this as availability. And then our regular meeting is November 26th. We're looking at potential for the 19th and the 26th, since the 12th is a holiday.
Okay.
The 19th, I have to pick up my wife up from SeaTac, so okay. I have to decide between you and my wife. I choose my wife. She talks a lot longer than you do, Paul.
So we're the schedule. Yeah.
All right. Thank you. Commissioner,
do you have any
questions?
Dave? I would hope that Tommy will bring back to us when we talk really about the style. Any feedback he might have as we've already kind of heard from Laura as to the design aspects, being incorporated as I understood it into the ordinance itself.
Mm-hmm.
Ability to do so, pros and cons, just so we can look at that as part of the style question.
Sure, it'll come up also in the substance when we get to that part.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, the next item on the agenda is going to be, I'll give you some items that need
some talks on that.
Some decisions. The first one is CPA 2013D, school mitigation fees, and also ZCA 2013-09, school mitigation fees. Paul, I guess you were presenting these items.
Yeah, this is a two or three part amendment that deals with the comprehensive plan, just as a reminder. Comp plan element involves adoption of the Monroe and Snohomish School District capital facilities plans. They're just recently adopted plans, adopting them by reference into the capital facilities element of our comp plan. And there are changes being proposed in that comp plan language that basically removes, that simplifies language, but also removes some of the, what I would call, more regulatory language from the comp plan itself. And follow-up to that is the implementation of that involves changes to Chapter 20, which talks about the school mitigation fees. Now, the commission, we had a workshop on this on September 24th, public hearing just a week ago. And this is up tonight for some form of recommendation. Council is scheduled to, in an introductory way, to talk about this on November 6th. And they are scheduled for final action by council in the first week of December. So there's a month in between their first consideration and final action. But we're here tonight to maybe revisit some of what's been discussed to date and set some direction for the commission and council.
Okay. Thank you. Well, we have two, we have the CPA, the comprehensive plan amendment, and we have the ZCA, which would be, I guess, the zoning code amendment. I would like to separate those out, but I think we need to make a decision separately on those. If, I wasn't here last week, so I'm getting a little, I'm kind of catching up, but if we could, I'd like to just talk about the comprehensive plan amendment. What we're being asked is to remove the language from the comprehensive plan so that it can be put into the municipal code, and then as a result, I understand city council will be able to modify the mitigation fees discount instead of having to wait through the whole cycle and go through the whole CPA process. And so I guess that is our discussion. I don't know where I was left out. Commissioners, any comments on that?
Clarification on the item, please.
Okay.
The, I know that we've got a revised copy of NMC 20.07 that has been yellowlined now to reflect some of the discussion points we had last week. Were there any changes to the yellowlined capital facilities element that we had in front of us last week? Or should we be referring back to the October 5th version?
No, there were no changes made to the comp plan text from the original submittal back on October 5th.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments? Are we at a place where we're ready to make a recommendation at this point?
I have some comments.
Okay.
I'm going to start with a rhetorical question. So please bear with me. How would the city of Monroe like it if the Department of Transportation, which is a state agency, came and said, we don't like your transportation fees, we think you need to do different? I use that as an example of us telling the Monroe School District what they should do with their fees. I think from the perspective of policy, it's wrong, and I think you're heading down the wrong path. if we need to take the regulatory language out of the comprehensive plan, let's do so. And let's do it by just saying in the comprehensive plan element as it relates to schools, the city shall adopt and implement the school district's capital facilities plan as amended every 2 years or more frequently as permitted by law, or something to that effect. Takes the regulatory language out of it, respects the independence, I guess I could say, and also the integrity, perhaps, of the school district and their capital facilities plan, which has been adopted, developed and adopted by the school district in accordance with state law, the Growth Management Act, and their capital facilities needs as they see them. I just don't think it's the city's place to be saying, that's all well and good, but we disagree, we're going to do something different with these. And oh, by the way, we might be able to change it more often, perhaps, if we feel a need to, thus reducing any predictability that you might have as far as mitigation fees coming from the city of Monroe related to the development. I'm going to be voting against it, and that largely is why. It is a policy question, as was mentioned last week, and I think the policy direction council's contemplating going here is the wrong direction. Let's not try to tell the school district how to run their business. I don't think they try to tell us that from ours.
Mr. Chair, a quick point I might make. The changes to the comp plan and the zoning code, the comp plan, the basic purpose is to remove the inappropriate language. Simplify. The zoning code sets forth the method pretty much as adopted by Snohomish County as a model for each capital facilities plan. What changes, though, is that it leaves the discount rate as a separate action for council, separate from the comp plan and the zoning ordinance. It becomes a separate action and part of the fee resolution. The discount rate is now 25%. That may change, and it may not. There's been some consideration to change to 50%, but that is actually another separate issue from the comp plan and zoning changes.
Well, but this is. I would correct you slightly there. The zoning book amendment does set the rate. The rate's not talked about, but it sets the fee.
Sorry. Thank you. It does set the fee, the basic fee.
The dollar amount.
The dollar amount,
which is based on
specify the discount rate. So here's the statement. Yeah, okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
And Paul, I appreciate those comments, but as I look at the proposed language of the capital facilities element as it relates to schools, the new language says the city declines to adopt the proposed impact fee schedules contained in the school facilities plans, disclaims any binding effect of the proposed impact fee schedules contained in the school facilities plan, and will establish the percentage discount, if any, in and through the school impact fee ordinance. In other words, school district, you don't know what we're doing, we know better. You don't know what you're doing, we know better. And we're gonna handle your fees. The city has a chance, as I understand it, to get together with the school district every 2 years and talk about their capital facilities fees, because the school district, based on state law and county ordinance, goes through a calculation to determine what that mitigation fee should be on a per unit basis. The school district also comes up with that percentage that is being talked about. If the city disagrees, the city has an opportunity to talk to the district about it and see if there can be a meeting of the minds. And if there can, and the capital facilities plan from the school district will reflect that, it will come forward and be adopted into our comprehensive plan. For us to just, in effect, totally disregard it, and that's how I see that language. I don't see that as being a good policy.
If I could just remind you how the calculation got into the capital facilities plan, and that's the city council granted that authority to the school district. The Monroe School District is one of very few that has that ability to actually calculate with what the fee is that's going to be charged. Everyone else calculates it outside of the capital facilities. The school district's calculating the total impact for a new student is according to the very complicated formula that they're forced to do. The calculation is a product of city council action. that is embedded inside of the Monroe Capital Facilities Plan. So keep, Monroe School District cannot change that calculation inside their capital facilities plan. It's 0.75, and it's required to stay 0.75 according to the comp plan. So they have no discretion over changing that discount. What this is doing is separating that from the capital facilities element, the capital facilities plan, the comprehensive plan, and putting it into the ordinance where it can be debated on an annual basis. And like you said, it should have, city council and the school district should have this conversation. But should it take place inside the two-year planning process for the capital facilities element of the school district, or should it take place in city hall in front of the legislative body that state law has granted that right to? And that's a, it's a distinction without a difference. You and I will agree or disagree on this, Dave, but I just want to make sure that we understand that calculation and the discount that's in the capital facilities plan from the Monroe School District is only there because the city council told them to put it there.
I thought from last week we were told that that calculation came from Snohomish County, actually, and it's also used by the Snohomish District.
You bet. The total calculation.
Yes.
The total impact.
Yes.
So the discounted portion, that second little portion that's in the capital facilities plan, is there because of city ordinance.
Right. And city comprehensive plan.
City comprehensive plan, hence the school district is required to comply with that.
And my suggestion was that it be taken, I support taking it out of the city's comprehensive plan, but saying that we respect and follow the city's or the school district's capital facilities plan as adopted, which is a process that through discussion involves the city and their own, as I understand.
And the city does adopt the school's capital facilities plan. And the only reason it has to disclaim that, is because previous ordinances have placed that language into the school capital facilities plan. Future school capital facilities plan will no longer have that calculation. And so this is a timing issue, and it was written by a city attorney that says that we need to put out an abundance of caution and be clear. We have inconsistency at this date between the school's adopted capital facilities plan and the city's comprehensive plan. So just to be clear, we have this very rough sounding language that won't be necessary when the school district updates its capital facilities element the next time.
One more minute.
Yeah.
And if the city's comp plan just said, we accept whatever the capital facilities plan from the school district says, we don't have an issue, do we?
Well, if that was the case, then the impact fee would have a zero discount and we would be charged. The city would then be accepting 100% of the impact that the school district calculates.
Didn't I read in the capital facility plan from the school district that, in fact, they acknowledge the 25% discount in the city's portion?
It creates an inconsistency. There's no requirement from the, once it's removed from the comp plan, there's no requirement for the school district to have that in their plan anymore.
And so if they take it out, they take it out. If they leave it as it is, there's no inconsistency either.
In the end, the city is then ceding its legislative decision-making authority to the school district in the capital facilities plan.
Which, with respect to school district fees, is, I can see
that. Again, policy.
Policy. Thank you. Appreciate it, Chair.
Thank you. Commissioners, any other comments? Discussion? We do need to make a some sort of recommendation. One way or the other, is anybody willing to make a motion in that direction?
I'll make a motion. The Planning Commission recommend against CPA 2013-D to the extent that it's written, and instead the comprehensive plan be amended to say that the city will adopt or incorporate by reference the school's mitigation, the school's capital facility plan as adopted or amended by the school district, and will, whatever language else is necessary to accomplish that. I think that's largely it. Staff, any comments on that? Is that the gist of it from what I've been saying?
I think so.
we're going to need very clear language, Dave, in modifying the document that's in front of you. This is the document that we're working against, so if you want to edit this, I would propose that you put this document on the table and then amend it to fit your needs.
And do I need to do that tonight, or can we continue that for the next meeting?
That's why we continue it for this meeting, I believe. But again, you're the commission.
So if I understand correctly, what we'd have to do is take a look at the text of the comprehensive plan, modify that, come up with a consensus that get a motion passed as a recommendation to the council. Do you have a proposed change to that text?
I'm not going to try to propose adequate language to do that in the next 3 minutes or 5 minutes.
Okay.
I don't think that would be fair to anyone. I guess maybe the first question would be whether there's support for the motion. If there isn't, then we'll die for lack of support. I think I personally, I believe it to be an important policy question, and worthy of the discussion and time if necessary.
Is there a second for that motion? I believe that motion dies. Is there anyone else wanting to address this issue or come up with another motion for this matter?
I'll make a motion to try and get this thing moving anyway, see where we're at. I make a motion that the Planning Commission for a recommendation to approve CPA 2013-D school mitigation fees to adopt a minimum school district capital facilities plan 2012-2017, the Snohomish School District Capital Facilities Plan 2012-2017, and the amended text within the capital facilities domain comprehensive plan.
I'll second.
A motion was made by Commissioner Christensen, seconded by Commissioner Tuttle. Any further discussion? Commissioner Demers?
I will be voting against this for the reasons already elaborated on.
Thank you. All right, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Thank you. All right, we come to ZCA 2012-09 school fees. Paul, is there any other discussion that we need to make on this, or should we just?
Not at this point.
I think so. So if I, just to make sure I understand it, I wasn't here last week, but I, as I understood the material I went through, I did recognize that I did not see a particular percentage. But as I understood it, it appeared to be that the dollar amount that is listed in this does represent a 50% discount. Is that, am I understanding it correctly?
The math adds up.
The math adds up to a 50% discount as opposed to previously was a 25% discount. Is that, that's how I understood it. And that's,
yes.
I didn't know if that was discussed, but that was. So. Commissioners, any discussion on this? ZCA, zoning from Amendment 2012-09 school fees.
I have a question. Since it does say that as the math comes up with 50%, is there anything that says we can't just say leave it at the 25% and send that recommendation on to City Council, and if they decide to change it at City Council, That's up to their decision, then. But for us to leave it at the 25%, I don't have an issue with forwarding the recommendation of leaving that 25% and seeing if the council agrees or disagrees.
And just to address, just kind of a technicality in that, the reason the percentage is in the ordinance is state law says that the fee shall be adopted by ordinance. And so our best interpretation is actually put a dollar figure in here rather than a percentage figure. So what I would recommend that you do, if that's your motion, is to put this document on the table as a motion to approve, and then amend the dollar figures in table 2070-180 to fit whatever that discount is you think is important. So we'll calculate a number and put it in there. But I think logically that's the best way to proceed so that we have a good legislative record as to how your decision was made.
Okay. Thank you.
So what that would entail then, just so I make sure I understand that on page 10, we have the school impact fee schedule, and we would then be modifying those dollar amounts based on whatever motion gets thrown out, if it's a modified motion or not.
I won't be able to give the dollar amounts in the motion.
You could direct staff to make those calculations.
You could simply qualify your recommendation of 25% as opposed to 50% discount. We can do the numbers.
Right.
If that's what you wish to do.
Thank you. Commissioners, any other comments regarding this? Dave?
First, thank you for checking on the 6 years versus 10 and making that correction. Something did last week. I don't understand in this ordinance why we are reiterating the impact fee calculation formula. And I believe that it actually is not the same as what the school district has. As I understand it, the city goes this direction as far as the policy shift. The city is accepting the school district's calculation that's generating a dollar amount, shall we say gross amount. Why are we reiterating a calculation I understood, I believe, comes from Snohomish County? What if the calculation changes somewhere else?
It can't change somewhere else. That's part of the countywide planning policies. So this calculation is required by Snohomish County for all school districts within its jurisdiction.
So in an effort then to shorten regulations, would it be better perhaps just to incorporate it by reference?
I'm not the drafter of this. Brad Farberg is the one that drafted the ordinance.
He's an engineer.
I don't know if it's changed in the past. Ralph might know better if it's changed in the past, but it is what it is. If that's your recommendation, we can sure include that recommendation that we incorporate the calculation by reference rather than by formula. And the final ordinance could be redrafted at that stage if council deems that that's a good desire.
Thank you.
Jeff?
I've voiced this before, but I have a very basic objection to the whole school mitigation fee being applied only to new construction, because I don't believe it's equitable. I said, for instance, if someone moves into a home that's never been, the builder's never paid mitigation fee, perhaps because of the age of the structure, and they move in with five children and a retired couple buys a new home up in the subdivision, the retired couple bears the burden of paying either the mitigation fee outright at the price of the home or buy the mortgage. And to me, that just is not equitable in concept. The whole concept is placing, and I don't know if there's ever been a legal decision about this, but placing an undue burden on only a portion of the population. That's exactly what we're condoning here if we go with this fee. But I'm willing to compromise, at least, you know, from any perspective and influence that I have, to say that at least we should make it equitable with what many other communities in the county do, which is 50%. Since we're at 75, we stand alone there, making us further prejudiced against those who pay this fee inequitably. So I would like to make the motion that we adopt the amended MMC Chapter 2007 School Impact Mitigation Fee Program and ZCA 2012-09 the way it's written, without any changes having to do with the percentage. So that's my motion, and that's why I made the motion.
Second. All right. Motion made by Commissioner Sherwood, seconded by Commissioner Rodman. Any further discussion?
Would there be onus on the maker's part to be taken out of the calculation language?
And adopted it by reference?
Yes.
To Snohomish County's formula?
Is that? Well, I think it's set forth in the capital facilities plan and given the school district. The calculations.
No, I would be willing to modify it to make sure that the calculation is consistent with countywide policy.
Thank you.
Okay, the amendment has been approved by both the original motion giver and the second. Any further discussion?
I'm going to vote against this as well, because I too think that this is a long time to take dollars away from the schools. They planned based on what was there, and I think it just follows, given my position earlier, as I stated with regard to the policy decision, it's rubbing salt in the wound, so to speak. So I think it's a long direction to go. We'll be voting against it. Thank you for the modification.
All right, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Motion carries. Thank you. Did you get on the thank you? I didn't check on the last one. I didn't get there.
On the motions?
Yes, I'm on the the motions and everything.
Okay.
Thank you. Okay, our final item is ZCA 2012-07 North Kelsey Design Guidelines. Again, I believe this was part of the public hearing last week.
Yeah.
And so we'll call this as you again. I'll let you go ahead and get that. Thanks, Mr. Speed.
Not just me. Commission discussed this on the 24th, like the school mitigation. I held a public hearing last week. Since that public hearing, we did make some pretty minor changes that show up in the red line version with the yellow highlighting. Some were more typo related. I think we caught the points raised by the commission at the public hearing. For example, removing the reference to architecturally the Monroe small town character, but elsewhere in the guidelines I found something related to Monroe's vernacular architectural character, which is very difficult to define since it's such a mix of styles. So its vernacular character essentially is a mixed style of architecture. I'm trying to capitalize on some. But that's one example. But there were a few other minor corrections to that. And also to note that we plan to keep the signage chapter intact in this set of guidelines until such time as we adopt the sign code, the updated sign code. And if North Kelsey is absorbed into that or replicated in that in terms of both the code and the appendices or attachments, then we will simultaneously or shortly after change this to delete that siding section from the North Kelsey guidelines. We'll keep the architectural and massive guidelines as you move forward tonight.
All right, thank you.
Commissioners, any discussion?
Couple of questions.
Yeah.
Am I the only one who really didn't know how vernacular would come into play with this? Oh, yeah, that's fine, but I'm wondering if there's a better way we could say it for those masses out there that might be reading this at some point.
It is a fairly common term within the design professions, the vernacular. I'm not sure what another synonym for that would be. The predominant.
I didn't know it.
The character.
Okay.
It's somewhat place specific. You know, the vernacular character of Santa Fe is going to be much different than that of Monroe or Seattle because of the region of the climate. But it, if you restrict it, if you interpret it very strictly, it means that there should be a northwest basis for architecture as opposed to, and we'll find adobe in Seattle for good reason.
All right. Other questions, comments? A few others?
Yeah.
In the page 25 is a yellow thing now. We talk about the application design guidelines. Are these not applicable to the couple of lots that are south of Turning Place or King Road? Isn't it, aren't those lots within, or is it one lot? Within the development area?
I think you're talking about the two stormwater detention facilities.
Wait, nothing else on the south side?
On the south side of Turning Place, the only thing that's there are two tracks, and we're, right now they're both stormwater detention facilities, and they're both underutilized. Lowe's originally, they were originally built to accommodate the stormwater for the entire development to the north, and they've used underground detention vaults for all of their needs. So it looks like those properties to the south of Tierney Place will not. They may be developed into retail pads or commercial pads at some point. But I believe they're within the geographical boundary of what North Kelsey has been.
Dave, are you in the clean?
No, I'm in the...
Okay, you're looking at a map.
I'm not looking at the map, I'm looking at the text.
At the text?
Okay. And it says, where is this from? Page 25 of the yellow line, middle of the paragraph of page, the specified plan development area is comprised of property west of Chain Lake Road, north of Turning Road, and along North Kelsey Street. So if in fact those pads were to become available for development, they would not be included based on that.
Okay, the text conflicts with the map.
Well, the map says it's to be updated.
The map and the clean version. The bond rate does actually catch those two properties south of Tierney. What we should do is delete reference to Chain Lake, Tierney, and North Kelsey and just say the specific plan development area is comprised of properties as shown in Figure 1, which includes that... properties as described earlier, but also includes those ones south of Tierney. We rely on a picture, not the text.
Is there a picture that shows it? Oh, it's a white line, isn't it?
Right.
Okay.
So are we modifying the text in that? Sounds like we need to.
That would be a modification of the last sentence on page 24 of the clean text. I also like to point out that the page numbers are messed up. That'll be fixed.
So it's going to now say, forgive me, the specified plan development area is...
3.3.
Is reflected in Figure 1.
Is comprised of properties reflected or as shown in Figure 1. That's the bottom of page 24.
the white line that can stand out to the first. I find it there.
It's a good point, I think. We know the concept.
Thank you for the chain link road and access point. And this is that. And last comment, I said, going to the signage and lighting. So there's no need to add any subset language in this. The staff's opinion, saying that it will go away with the upcoming sign ordinances. I thought it doesn't create, won't create a conflict in any way.
Our intention is to, when we adopt the new sign regulations, there will be repeal language that will repeal this language in the interim. In the meantime, we're still going to be faced with two sets of signing regulations.
Okay.
For the next 30 to 200 days, depending on how persistent the guys are on the site.
Yeah, if for some reason the decision is made not to incorporate North Kelsey, for whatever reason it might be, then it does keep this in intact. So it's really more about insurance and in response to your observation last week about not having a gap.
Right. No, I appreciate
one,
that.
One to the other.
Thank you.
This is a simple way to solve that problem.
That's all I have, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Bill? Just for a question in my mind, what would be the process then that we'd have to go through once the new sign code came out? What would be the process to change this document? That it would just change? Or would we have to go through amending the development plan?
We could take action on changing these guidelines, deleting that chapter in the same meeting that we do the sign code update. We might be able to do that under one amendment. If not, we do it under two zoning amendments, but clearly one will cancel the other.
Okay.
All right. And it's very typical in an ordinance to repeal sections of code at the same time you're implementing sections of code. It's still the art of drafting the ordinance.
I just didn't have it in my mind how that process would go, because I've not been through that process. Thank you.
So, all I'm hearing then is that this doesn't require a comp plan amendment to go back and remove the sign element from this one to be able to sign code.
No, it does not. Not since we removed that language earlier this year in that North Kelsey comp plan amendment.
Is there anything that ties the North Kelsey design code with what we are planning or what we are in the process of doing in the downtown? Is there anything in here about that, or is there any way that it ties together between the two so it's consistent?
Well, we did retain some language about connections to the downtown area. From North Kelsey to downtown, there was some discussion about deleting some of that since it wasn't necessarily appropriate any longer, but there was one citizen coming in that there are indeed a lot of people who do go back and forth between downtown and North Kelsey and a number of walkers in North Kelsey. So we kept that language intact to keep those connections and keep that as part of one of the considerations of as one of the guidelines. So the short answer is yes.
I do have one problem with the street landscaping. There's trees in the nest they make. This is trying to keep them down the bushes, so the trees.
Our public works manager would agree with you.
Any other comments or questions?
would recommend we make a proposal to council to approve zoning amendment CZA 2012-07 within the North Kelsey Design Guidelines.
Second. Great. Motion made by Commissioner Rodlin, seconded by Commissioner Christensen. Any further discussion?
Just to add that with changes.
With changes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Zach.
With the discussed changes. Great. Any other discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Thank you. Motion carries. All right. Okay, that's all the end of our work. All we have left is the discussion by commissioners and staff. Jeff, anything from you? No?
Just in terms of schedule, I get some idea of November 19th and 26th is a regular date. November 19th is a doable date as a substitution for November 12th. The primary thing I'm trying to deal with there is the Roosevelt Road rezoning, and we can schedule a public hearing for November 19th with the commission so that can carry forward.
The 19th works for me. Are you able to conflict on that? I will say the 26th. Is it the 26th or 29th? 26th.
26th. Oh, okay.
I think it's
the Monday of Thanksgiving week, I believe.
Jeff, it is long. The 19th is fine as long as the signed gentleman doesn't have to be at the meeting. Because he said he could be here. Is his presence necessary on that day?
Well, I think we can at least have some discussion, and the point I'd make here in the discussion is that we do have Tom as a consultant on a budget, and we do need to hold him to this budget contractually because the way that our contract was withdrawn. So there may be sessions where we, if we have to, Mark and Jeff and I will work through materials from the consultant, and we'll get Tom here for at least a couple meetings. I believe he's scheduled for, there's a finite number of meetings with the commission and then also with the council. So we'll tap him as a resource as best we can, but we do need to move this project along as well. I'm going to be very careful about his contract.
So by the 19th, you'll have some additional information to us to look at?
I think so, yes. And there may be some other agenda items by that point in this as well.
Great. Anything else? Paul?
No, I don't think so.
All right, thank you. Leah?
No.
Bill?
Nothing.
Jeff?
No.
Dave?
Do we have a forest support representative these days?
We do.
Yeah. Is that Bill?
It
is.
Yes.
Anything you want to
I did not attend the last meeting, but I haven't heard that.
Thank you. Have you heard
that?
Okay.
I don't have any either. Then with that, I would entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
Motion made by Commissioner Sherwood, seconded by Commissioner Goodson. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you.